Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet, by webcast and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes and this is The Unexplained. Well, a few things to say before we get to the guest, Damon T. Berry, on this edition. The first one is thank you very much for being with me on my journey during 2016. I don't mean that to sound grand in any way, but in many ways it has been a journey. This was the year the show got back in one form on the radio and continued to develop with my webmaster Adam Cornwell's help online. So, from the point of view of The Unexplained, it has been a very good year, but none of it can happen without you. Thank you very much for your support, for understanding me and understanding what I'm all about. It's really marvellous the way you've done that. I know I've said this before in some forms, but look, you don't know me, you've never met me. You know that I'm some guy. If you're in the UK, you might have heard me on the radio doing news and various things over the years. If you're in the US, you're not going to know me from anything. But you seem to understand me. Thank you very much indeed. I'm a guy doing something that I've always wanted to do. For reasons that I don't quite understand, some of us just, you know, we have to communicate. And that's me. It's always been what I've been about ever since I was a kid in Liverpool. So thank you very much for being part of all of this during 2016. If you've made a donation during 2016, thank you very much indeed. That will allow us to continue into this new year of 2017. I did say that over the last few weeks I've been dealing with an issue. Just to say that it has been and is a health issue. And, you know, as these things always are, I've had to give a certain amount of attention to that. So thank you for understanding during the period when sometimes shows have not appeared quite on the schedule that they might have done or they should do. So thank you very much indeed. It only remains for me, before we get to Damon T. Berry, who will explain a theory, a view of life, the world, and everything that you may not have heard before. He's a filmmaker in the US and has come up with something that connects a lot of the dots. That's all I can say really about him. You've got to hear this to understand it. But look, before we get to Damon T. Berry, I'd just like to say again, thank you very much indeed. And we're going to do more stuff in 2017. So Damon T. Berry coming right up. Before you hear him, just to say, I don't know whether you will consider this one as being one for the kids, because he does refer to what we Brits call the male appendage, okay? It's nothing salacious, it's nothing rude, but he does use the word and refer to it as part of his research and his narrative. So, you know, I don't think that's necessarily one for the young kids, but just to tell you that that reference is in here. Before you go any further listening to this, a very interesting man, I think you will find. Please tell me what you think about him and about these shows. Go to the website, designed and created by Adam at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool, theunexplained.tv. That's the place you can leave me a message. Tell me what you think of the show and suggest guests. Vital that you do that, and thank you if you have. So, let's get to the guest now in the United States, Damon T. Berry. Damon T. Berry, thank you very much for coming on The Unexplained.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Damon, it's a pleasure. You have been suggested by a number of listeners. I think they probably heard you in other places. And I did a little bit of checking up about you, and I thought, yeah, let's get this guy on. He sounds interesting. So tell me a little bit, for people who are not familiar with you, perhaps they haven't heard those shows that my other listeners heard. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, the show that we have created is an online series. It is called The Knowledge of the Forever Time. And The Knowledge of the Forever Time is a series that seeks to unveil the hidden mysteries of everything that we don't know. It's a story that unveils a story about humanity that we don't even know exists. It's a story that reaches past the ancient world. So most of our stories, when we hear the beginnings of where we were, we start back at 4500 BC. Sometimes we go to 10,000 BC. The series that we have created, it reaches beyond ancient. It goes into the prehistoric realm and shows you that everything that we have been taught about our history isn't true. We found that in the prehistoric era, 50,000, 60,000, 100,000 years ago, there is evidence of a technological civilization that had all of the abilities that we have today. It had all of the technology that we have today.
Now, quite a number of people are saying this. You know, there have been many people. Eric von Daniken hinted at it. I interviewed him recently, and many others. What makes your research, which sounds painstaking and, you know, complex, what makes it different?
Well, Eric von Daniken and all these other civilizations, they go back as far as 10,000, 13,000, sometimes 15,000. We're talking 100 million. We're talking 200 million years old. So it's the level and it's the depth of time that we're talking about that's different. And there's another thing that we're talking about in the series that's different from everyone else's is because we're showing you that there is each civilization that lived on our Earth lived approximately 5 to 10,000 year increments. And then for some reason, they are completely wiped out. And for 5 to 10,000 year increments, there's another civilization that comes up and is doing exactly what we're doing today, and then they get wiped out. And then after that, another civilization arises that thrives for 5 to 10,000 years, and then they get wiped out. So there's a cycle of this living and dying and people being wiped out on the Earth that are achieving exactly what we are achieving today, and their end is always completely wiped out. And what we're trying to do is tell you the story that within every hieroglyphic, within every cave painting, within every pyramid, within every stone structure, there is an individual on this earth before they get wiped out who's leaving clues as to what happens in the end of these civilizations.
So and it's not just, you say it's a cycle, it's something that repeats. And if it repeated without previous civilizations leaving any clues about themselves, then it would be a pointless cycle. But if there are clues, and I'm interested to know how you have found those clues, that makes it groundbreaking research that you're doing.
Yes, that's the most important part. It's the clues. The one thing that we do know is every civilization that comes is complete. For example, our own civilization. Our civilization began around 4500 BC, and we as a civilization have no clue what happened prior to that. We literally have no idea what happened. And our history begins with we're coming out of caves, we're hunter-gatherers, we're learning how to farm, then we become this industrialized civilization. And that's what we believe our beginnings are. And yet we have clues and evidence that show that there was a civilization here 10,000 years prior to that. And then there's even more evidence showing that there's a civilization 20,000, 30,000, 50,000, and yet we have no knowledge of what happened to them. So in each of these different epochs in our civilization, in our world, there's civilizations that have come up and they've done exactly what we're doing now, and for some reason they are completely wiped out.
Do you know if it's always, Damon, the same reason? Is it a natural cataclysm, disease? As far as you can see, is it always the same circumstance that stops the that particular link in the chain?
From the research that we have done, it's something that is outside of our world that happens. It is something that comes in from the outside that changes what happens to humanity. And what's so important is, for example, there are cave paintings that are 60,000 years old. And if you look at these cave paintings, they give you a detailed view of the cosmos, complete with black holes, star systems, planets, things that could not possibly be done without a satellite, without a Hubble-like telescope, or without exploration of space in some way. And because this evidence is here, it's showing us, these cave paintings are showing us, we are intelligent people. We have done what you're doing now. And then you go then to Egypt, and Egypt has a structure that's just a pyramid. But if you look on the walls of the pyramid and look really, really closely at what they're presenting, in most of these cases, Egypt is showing us a view of the sun that we cannot see unless we're up close to the sun. And it's also showing that there is a link between the sun and a funnel, a bending of space-time that takes us somewhere else in the cosmos. So the one thing that I can tell you about our civilization as opposed to the others, all the other civilizations, according to the Mayans and according to the Sumerians, each civilization on our Earth is given 5,125 years to thrive. The Mayan calendar began in 3,114 BC, which says this is when our civilization began. And 5,000 years later, 125 years, we passed that 4 years ago. So all the other civilizations that came before us, they were smarter than us, they were more intelligent than us, and they achieved more. Within their 5,125-year cycle, they left the Earth, they traveled through this gate in the sky, they came back with great wisdom, they came back with great power, and then after that, their entire civilization is wiped away.
So it sounds like someone somewhere is playing some kind of cosmic game with us, that we have our allotted time, the clock starts running, and then we're allowed to go and run off and into the playground and make whatever we can of it. Is that how you see it?
It's pretty close to what you're saying. I think the thing is really about development. I think it's human. I think the key is human development, and each civilization apparently is given the same amount of time to complete a task, or to grow in a certain way, or to evolve in a certain way. But the one thing that we do know is, every nation that came before us, they end horribly. And the one thing that in every ancient literature and ancient scripture tells you, that no one is to know what happens in the end. No one is to know what happens in the last days of the earth. And because no one is supposed to know, no one is able to tell our story. For example, there is an Aborigine civilization that came before us. And they had this great detailed paintings in caves about space, sky, cosmos. And for some reason, the entire civilization vanished. We have the Mayan civilization, a civilization with meticulous understandings of the stars, the cosmos, the planets. Their calculations of where the planets are more accurate than our own, and that's with our computers. And then all of a sudden, a million people vanish. And so this story is happening all over the world. And even there's evidence of civilizations, even in the Antarctic, of these people who created these strange alien structures in their civilization. They have these strange tales about these beings coming from the sky. And then overnight, 300,000 people completely vanish. So there is something that happens on our Earth that any individual that has this knowledge of what happens, they get taken from this earth. And the reason is, the rest of us, for some reason, aren't supposed to know. Mm. So that's what makes these clues so important.
From what you say, though, Damon, and I don't want to be flippant about it, because it sounds fascinating and very plausible to me, I have to say, but you're still here.
Yes. But the one thing that I can say that I think is different about our story, our version of Earth is different from everyone else's, because the one thing that they know is, if there's anything that gives us clues, they wipe it away. If there's anything that tells us a story, they wipe it away. And if we go back to 100 million years ago, they wipe everything clean from the Earth. But there's something very interesting about that, because 100 million years ago, someone carelessly left a hammer. 200 million years ago, someone carelessly left an imprint of a man's footsteps. And 200 million years ago, he wasn't barefooted. They show this man wearing shoes, created shoes. So I think there has to be a human element to our destruction, where some human being who's in charge of making sure these things are destroyed carelessly or purposely leaves a clue. And that's what I think it is. Because, for example, the Antikytherion, I don't know if you're familiar with that object, the Antikytherion is an object that was found in the sea that was probably 2,000 years old, but when you unlock this creation, it shows us everything in the cosmos. It shows us how every planet moves. It shows us how everything surrounds us, how every star moves. And because this was created 2,000 years ago, and we just suddenly find it, it can't be coincidence that we're finding this evidence that they were just as technological and even smarter than we are, and yet they're completely wiped out.
So if we buy this, then it sounds like there is some superior intelligence who wants to know how each iteration of our civilization progresses, what kind of technology they move towards, and what kind of development of themselves they get to. And then once they're done, once their cycle is completed, somebody hits the big red stop button.
Well, I think it's close to that, but it's probably more ominous than that. And that is because the clues that we have of our ancient days tell us something very disturbing. For example, in each of these cave paintings and each of these hieroglyphics, they will show us something that I don't think we're prepared as a civilization to accept. The one thing that they show in each of these Babylonian and Sumerian texts, they show these gods coming to our world. And these gods come to our world, and they come in a certain period. It always says five. So every 5,000 years, these gods come. And the next thing that you see in these reliefs, these gods pulling up vegetation, literally pulling up vegetation, and they make a call to the others, it's time to harvest. So the scary thought about that is what they're harvesting. Because after 5,000 years, when they complete this harvest, the civilizations are gone.
So, again, if we follow this train of logic, whatever it is wants us to get to a certain point where we've created something for them, which they will then, quotes, harvest. It's almost like the biblical notion of the harvesting of souls.
Yes. That's the sad part of the story. And a part of the knowledge of the harvest is what's being hidden from our civilization. We're not supposed to know about that. And the story that they're putting in every hieroglyphic, in every cave painting, is they're showing that there's a connection between planets and these beings. And the one thing that each of these beings are carrying when they leave this earth, they always have a handful of plants. And the plants always are circular, as if to look like apples, I guess, or peaches or apricots. But there may be a misunderstanding of what a plant was to them and to us. It could be a plant to us or a planet, because each of these star constellations that they're painting in caves, they all have some connection to Earth. And we may be just one of many planets that they come and take these lives of humans from.
I am going to get emails, because I always do. I have an educated listening force out there. And there will be people saying, great theory, which indeed it is, but this is pseudoscience. What do you say to them? If you get to hear those sorts of criticisms, what would you come back with?
Well, there is a disease that happens when faced with a knowledge that is contrary to what you believe is possible. It is called cognitive dissonance. And cognitive dissonance happens when you're presented with a knowledge that is completely contrary to everything that you've been taught your entire life. And once you hear this knowledge, you find it so unbelievable, so preposterous, that it couldn't be true, that you discount it. And that is what happens in our world, and it's a very unfortunate, but we're taught to be the worst thing about our civilization as opposed to all the others. We're taught that what we believe is more important than anything. We're taught that how we believe, what we believe, and just the thought of believing is more important than anything, and it isn't. And I think that's what makes our civilization slower than all the others. Because when we are presented with knowledge, we have to choose whether we believe it. We don't sit and count, weigh, measure to determine whether it is true. We choose an internal function of whether we believe it. And because we don't weigh, count, and measure the evidence, we let our beliefs choose whether we accept it or not. That's what creates the problem. So whenever you're creating anything that is in science or archaeological, you count, you weigh, and you measure, and that's the truth. But we are taught in our world that if you don't believe it, it's not true. If you don't believe it, you don't have to accept it. And that's what's creating the schism between what is reality, what's real truth, and what is popular notion. And I think that's where we are.
But human beings are imbued with the quality of reasoning. And they sometimes wrongly, as we've seen in the past, with a lot of people who've gone down a very incorrect path and then caused problems for the world, things like the Third Reich, etc. People have a right and an intellect, and they are able to make choices. That is the nature of being a human being. And you're asking people to accept this because it is. Yeah?
Well, exactly. I mean, here's the problem with, here's the part of the growth of intellect. The growth of intellect cannot be based on whether you believe it. It can't. It has to be based on whether you can prove it, whether you can cite it, whether you can see it, count it, weigh it, or measure it. If you can't, then it's in the realm of belief. But if there's evidence there that you can count, weigh, and measure, that must supersede anything that you feel or think about it. And the problem that we're having in our world today is the reason so many people will not accept this knowledge is because all throughout our history, someone has written in a book, we came out of caves 4,000 years ago. The world didn't exist at past that point. We were just learning how to be hunters and gatherers, and we started learning how to create civilization. And yet there's evidence 20, 30, 40, 50,000 years ago showing us views of the cosmos that aren't possible without a satellite that's in space. So we cannot lean on beliefs in realm of science. Science is count, weigh, measure. Mm. If you cannot do that, then it's not valid.
So, Damon, what are you asking people to do?
I think what I'm asking people to do is to look at the clues, because the only thing that's different from our civilization than all the others that were wiped out, they didn't have clues. No one left them clues. We're the only civilization that has clues. And the reason I know they don't have clues is because every clue that is left is wiped clean. So the previous world, they didn't understand the cave paintings. If they did, the last world would have wiped them clean. They wouldn't have understand the rocks, the stones, the pyramids, and so forth. When you understand those things, those are actually clues. Those, somebody is telling us this is what happens in the end. And there's one more thing that's really important that we should understand that really makes the point. In the ancient world, there is worship of the penis, and I'm sure you're aware of that. Phallic worship was really big in the ancient world.
Well, you've only got to go to the west of England, and you will see a figure on a hillside, a big white figure, and he has exactly that organ that you describe emphasized.
Exactly. But there is more to the story that we don't know. So it's really, when you understand the story of the phallic symbol, everything that we have been taught about the history of it is completely wrong. It has nothing to do with what we think it means. The phallic symbol, based on everything that is the ancient world is teaching, has nothing to do with the sexual component of our idea of it. The phallic symbol means one thing in the ancient world, and it's confirmed in Nazca. Have you ever seen the alien in Nazca? There's an alien that's standing in a large square in Nazca. Mm-hmm. And this alien with these huge alien eyes, he has this erect phallus while he's standing on this hill. So if you go to Nazca, you'll see it. Or you can go look it up online. What the phallus actually means is something more important than that. The phallus actually means not erection, not sexual component. It actually means what comes out of the phallus, and that is seeds, human seeds. That's what the phallus creates. So for each of these structures in our ancient world, they're telling us there's something about the phallic seed that creates the importance of our world and also the ending of it. So the creation of seeds is something that you plant, which then you harvest. So that's what the whole story is about in each of these civilizations. They're telling us something happens, and the Nazca Lines is telling you that there is a correlation between alien and the human seed.
So do you think that there is some alien civilization that has somewhere in a university or somewhere Mark 1 human being, Mark 2 human being, and we are the whatever thousandth iteration of the human being? And it's almost like, you know, almost like Corvettes. Here's the Mark 1 Corvette and there's the Mark 6.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, if that were the case, I would not be surprised at all, because the evidence is overwhelming. And the evidence is also overwhelming that there are flying saucers. They're depicted on the wall in Egypt. They go back 50,000 years in cave paintings. So the evidence is showing us that everything that we're doing in our world, they experienced in the previous world.
Okay, so, now I know the images that you're talking about, and I keep reading things that say, no, it's not a flying saucer there. You're not seeing somebody with some kind of tablet computer in their hands there. These things have been misinterpreted. What do you say?
Well, again, this goes into belief. The one thing that we have to accept is, if we are to grow intellectually, if the ancients are showing us a view of the cosmos, they're showing us the star patterns, star constellations. They're showing how the Earth rotates around the sun. When we're telling them, you know, 45,000 years ago, we thought the Earth was flat and the center of the universe. And then we go back 50,000 years, and they're clearly showing us how everything works. We have to stop presupposing that we are superior, and that's our problem. We think that we are superior to anything that came before us. Anything that came before us, we're doing it better.
So is the way the cycle works, that 5,125 years is roughly the point at which we get too big for our boots?
Is it roughly the point that we get to what now?
Too big for our boots. We get to, you know, we have a little bit too much chutzpah and hubris.
Well, from what I've seen, it's truly about leaving the earth. Everything that we have that shows what happens to humanity has everything to do with leaving this earth. And if you've ever seen the ancient alien television shows, or you've heard the ancient alien von Däniken theory, everything that we have in the ancient world shows us men coming back in spacesuits, and they are human beings. And that is becomes the beginning of our civilization. So whatever we do in our world, at some point we're supposed to progress to the point where we leave this earth. Because humanity always picks up the story of ancient aliens, and these ancient aliens are always human beings. They're in clothes that we recognize, astronaut uniforms that we recognize, which means the previous world left this earth, they traveled into the cosmos, they came back, and there's a prize to leaving the earth. And the prize that everyone's been talking about is this fountain of youth. To leave the earth, to be rejuvenated with God, to come back and live for eternity. And the civilization that started before we began, Sumerian, they tell tales of men coming back from the sky. And one man came back from the sky and lived 47,000 years. Another one came back from the sky and lived 37,000 years. Eight men together lived for 230,000 years on our earth. So the prize in leaving the earth is to gain this immortality, as they tell us in the early civilizations that the tree of life gives. And we know now that the tree of life isn't someplace in Persia. The tree of life that the ancient world was talking about is a constellation in the sky.
Now, unless I've got this completely wrong, you told me at the beginning of our conversation that various civilizations, all of them, have all ended in a horrible way that we're not allowed to know. So you're saying that we end in a horrible way, we go somewhere else, and then we return as a kind of cleanup crew. Is that so?
From what I see, and this is what I see, the world is very different for those who leave and those who stay. The ones who leave, from what we see, when they leave, they enter a hole. And this is what's described by the Egyptians. It's described by the cave painters. It's described by the Aborigine. There is a hole somewhere in space that is near the sun, from what they're saying. We go somewhere, we call it a black hole. We enter into this hole. We're gone for 2 weeks. We learn many things. We come back to this earth 2 weeks later, and it's actually 2,000 years later. The ones that come down, they become the ones who teach the rest of us. They become the ones who teach the new world, who show everyone what everything's supposed to be. They literally become our teachers, and most of them would call them gods.
And then, as in the case of Egypt, the pyramids get built under supervision, and those doing the supervising, as you say, go away.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, this is amazing, and, you know, it in my small brain, it makes a lot of sense. It's, you know, we're looking for logic. Well, here's a logical explanation to life, the world, and everything. This is the biggest question I will ask you, but it's in the shortest number of words. How do you know all this?
The one thing that I learned, and it's a discrepancy. When I started learning about the world, I started with the Bible. And I was a very religious person at one time in my life. But then as I began learning science, I learned a lot of things in the Bible aren't true. And so I started learning about science and archaeology, and then I started learning a lot of the things that were in the archaeological record wasn't true. And then I started learning about Egypt, and of course everyone has a different view of it, and then I started learning a lot of that isn't true. So I began looking at evidence with a skeptical eye, and I found the reason that so many things aren't true that is written in our history, because we write what we want to find. We write what we're looking for, and we don't. That's not necessarily the truth. So when I started looking, I told myself, when you dig, whatever comes out is the story. Don't look for anything in particular. Whatever comes out of this knowledge is the story. And that's how I approached everything that I began researching. And believe it or not, if you approach history with an open mind, without beliefs, without any kind of premeditated thought of what you think or hope to find, if you just divorce yourself from all of that, you'll see a story that is completely magnificent. And the evidence is so overwhelming that it's stronger than any evidence that we have against it.
Hmm. And now you tell me that you created a multi-part series. If that's there to be, we'll talk about how to access that at the end of this. But you couldn't have done this alone. What sorts of people helped you along the way?
Well, we have a team. I'm in Dallas, Texas, and we have a few others that are in Los Angeles, California. And we work together, and each of us takes a little slither of the story, and we work together to create it. And the thing that we all look for is not what the world is telling us. When we look at Egypt, we're not looking at what the world's telling us. What do we find? And if we're looking at the Mayans, let's not look at what the world tells us. What do we find? So it's kind of like going to a crime scene and not taking the word of the first detective on the scene. You look for your own clues. And believe it or not, you'll find something very different, because people generally discover what they're looking for.
Right, so you're telling me the difference between you and anybody else who's done this work is that you go into it and your team go into it without preconceived notions.
At all. Nothing. We look at everything from the beginning. And, for example, with the Pyramid of Egypt, everyone has 1,000 different stories about it, and everyone discounts everything about it because they can tell you a different alien story or some other creation story, but in the pyramid itself is the answer to why it's created. In the pyramid itself, it tells you who created it. In the pyramid itself, tells you what it's for. And the evidence is so obvious. It's just unbelievably obvious. But to the person who wants to make a name for himself, he's got to add some splash to it. It has to have some kind of alien part to it, or it has to, you know, back up what he's already believed. But our story of the pyramid is different from everyone else's because we're telling you what the pyramid actually says. And the part where you weigh, count, and measure, that's all we leave you with. We don't leave you with any beliefs at all.
Now, what can we do with this information now you're putting it out there? What do you think we ought to be doing with it?
I think the purpose of every civilization is to come to a point of development where we save our Earth and save as many human beings as we can. The phallic symbol does not mean erection or sexual component. The phallus is important because of what comes out of it, seeds. And seeds that come out of a phallus are human beings. So the sole purpose of what we are to do on this Earth is to save as many human beings as we can. And there's something that happens to our world every 5,125 years. And we have passed that point 5 years ago, which means there is something on the horizon that happens to this world.
Wow, there are lots of people, you know this, who talk constantly and with a deal of relish in some cases about the end times. The end times are coming. So you believe we are past our sell-by date?
Well, from what all evidence is showing us is we're past our, sell-by date. The thing that is really important, though, is the Mayans probably are the greatest technological people of all time. They just outmaster us in nearly everything. But the one thing they tell us is in 2012, it is the end of our world. And it is the ushering in of a new period of enlightenment, a new period of understanding that what we didn't know. And this enlightenment comes with the knowledge that we are not the alpha males on this planet. We are not the alpha species. We are not top of the food chain. And that knowledge is supposed to enlighten us and change us and also change our world.
Now, you know that there were various people who made various interpretations about what the Mayans said, and there were people who went to Fiji and various places like that so they could be there at the end of the world in 2012, and then we were told, well, no, it's not quite the end of the world. It's metaphorically the end of the world. It means, as you said, it's a new beginning. But, you know, there were people who really did believe it was the end.
Right, right. But again, that's belief, and that's different from what they're saying. And that's one of the things that we were talking about before. See, count, weigh, and measure. If you look at the Mayans, they never said it's the end of the world. They never said that anywhere. But because we
want But that's a belief, isn't it, Damon? Sorry again to interrupt. It's a belief, isn't it? It's a belief that that's what they meant. So we're back into the realm of belief.
Exactly. And that's what makes our world so horrible from all the others that came before us. We are the worst people ever to be on this earth. And I'm not saying that to be disparaging, because if you recoil at that, it means that you have arrogance in you. I'm saying this as a fact. This world has not been this hot for 56 million years. We are destroying the world in a pace that none of the others ever did. And we have ice core samples that go back 400,000 years, and we can't find any destruction that is equal to what we're doing to the earth right now. And because we are, they say we are projected in the next 40 years to lose all of the sea life. In the next 40 years, we've lost 70% of all our wildlife, and we're losing our environment on top of that. And we're doing something that no civilization that came before us ever did, and that's destroy the earth. And because we are doing this, we have to at some point stop believing, because belief will say, well, the earth is resilient, but the earth will just bounce back. Belief will tell you, we can do whatever we want. God won't let us destroy it. Belief will tell you, Jesus will come back and save us in the end. And that's what belief is doing to our world. It's stopping us from looking at the data of what we're doing to our planet. And that's what makes us the most destructive people ever to be on the earth.
But what you've just told me is a belief, isn't it? You believe that we're not heeding the warnings.
Oh, no, no. It's not a belief. This is the data. If you look at any ice core samples or any national atmospheric, we are heating up the world faster than any human civilization that ever been here, that's ever been here. And the ice core samples that you dig out of the soil will tell you how much CO2 is in the environment. And it goes back 400,000 years. And according to all of the weather atmospheric agencies that we have, the Earth has never been this hot. And this is all human-created heat that we're doing on this planet. And what makes it so important is we're drying out our planet. We're literally killing our planet. And why this is important is because Mars looked exactly like the Earth. Evidence shows they had oceans, they had mountains, they had grass, they had everything that we have. But something happened in their past where they got so hot, they dried it completely out. And we're doing the exact same thing to the Earth. And I think we should all give pause to that and set aside our beliefs and start looking at the data.
Okay, now as a person who prosecutes radio shows, who does this kind of stuff for a living, I have to ask you this. There will be people who say that if we have all of us 5,125 years and then it's over, why does any of that matter?
The goal is to save as much of the seed as we can. And human beings are the seed. The purpose of life, that's the part no one gets to see until the end. The ones who actually see what happens in the end, they get taken from the earth. And the ones who get taken from our earth have to create this, the rest of us create an oral history that never happened. For example, if you've ever seen the Hopi Indian, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Hopi prophecy rock.
Yes.
Hopi Indians have prophecies that tell us what these carvings mean. And if you know any study, if you've done any study of these carvings, they couldn't be further from the truth. None of it means what they're saying. The Aborigine have these strange alien-like beings, and they said they're travelers from the sky. This is their oral tradition. Couldn't be further from the truth. None of it's true. And then you have all of these other civilizations where they're telling you what happens, but oral tradition is telling you, not the individuals who were there, not the individuals who understand. So the ones who understand what happens in the end, they get taken. But the sole purpose of all of us is this is what we have over all of the nations that came before us. We have clues, and we now know they are clues. If we can take the time to read these clues, understand these clues, we could change our future and the next future of the next Earth. We could stop the cycle, perhaps.
Now, look, there is a problem with this, though, isn't there? Because we have a multimedia world now. You and I are talking as part of it. You know, the news of things that happen around this world takes a couple of seconds to go from Los Angeles to London and right round the world, doesn't it? So if somebody was to find the secret, what happens in the very end time, and then they were to be disappeared, as people, you say, who find that secret are, we'd all know about it, wouldn't we?
Yes. Yes, we would.
So have there been people who've discovered what really happens at the very, very end, the meaning of life, and have they been disappeared in our civilization, in our time?
In our civilization, I don't know of any, but there are many ancient tales of Greeks who tell tales of individuals who understood certain stones and they were never heard from again, and individuals who walked in certain places and then they were never heard again. There's too many stories of vanishings in our world. There's just too many. And I don't know if you've ever heard the story of Göbekli Tepe. It's a civilization that was some 2,000 years ago, and it was a civilization, a city, thriving. And we just recently found this city in the last 10, 15 years. And when we found the city, everything was intact. Nothing was burned. Nothing was destroyed. There was no explosions. It was literally someone covered the entire city over with earth, just completely covered it over. So everyone that was in that city just vanished, and they just covered the city over so that no one would know. So there's clearly something that happens to where none of us are supposed to tell what happens. But this time, the knowledge of the Forever Time, the series that we're creating, is showing you the different clues that tell us what happens. We're showing you the different steps, the different levels that create the end of the world. And once we understand these steps, if we can put all these pieces together, we'll have a better story and a better understanding of what to look for.
Mm. I mean, look, a lot of people, you've only got to listen to radio in the UK or in the US. A lot of people say that they lack meaning in their lives. They don't know what it's all for. They say, what's it all about? Here is an explanation, possibly.
Yes, but remember, the worst thing that happens to the human mind is belief. And I don't mean that to be derogatory in any way. But the human brain, when we're given to this world, it is taught to analyze our environment, analyze our atmosphere, analyze our planet. We are taught to count, to weigh, and to measure. And then we can surmise what things are and what things aren't. We know that 1 + 1 = 2. The opposite of up is down. The opposite of hot is cold. But once you begin introducing belief to an individual, it literally corrupts the hard drive of the mind. It's a corruption factor. So that depending on what you've learned and believed, you start saying, 1 + 1 doesn't actually mean 2. It could mean 3. It depends on how you see it. Up isn't actually down. I mean, up is not the opposite of down. Down could really be up. If we really have to discover it, it could be. So these little tiny iterations of fluctuations in reason change the individual. And it changes the individual in the long run for a terrible reason. So that when someone comes to you in the future and says, look, the data is here. We are destroying our world at a pace we've never seen before. The believer will say, well, it's not really destroyed. I disagree with climate change. I don't think any of that's true. I just believe that it's not. So the belief system becomes our worst enemy in the end. It starts out innocent, but it becomes our worst enemy.
Let me get one thing absolutely clear so I understand it and my listeners do too. If I ask you the question, who is controlling this game, this cycle, this repeating series of cycles, I have a feeling that you're going to tell me we are.
No.
No, okay. So no. Who is controlling it all?
I don't want to try to give away too much because I'd like to see you to watch the series, The Knowledge of the Forever Time. In the most recent one, which is the 6 invitations, as I call them, it tells you what happens in our world. For example, we believe that everything in our world is new to us. Every time we do anything, we call it the first for mankind, even though there's 100 million years worth of evidence showing that man's already done this before. Everything that we do, we label as the greatest of mankind. We're the first nation. We're the first people. And none of this is true. Everything that we do in our world is guided. It is an inevitable end because the evidence is showing that every civilization before us did the exact same thing we're doing now. And the reason the Mayans are so important is because they saw our world as a cycle. They saw it as a rising and falling. You know, we see time as a straight line. They saw it as a circle. And they saw everything that we create in our world as a circle, meaning it's already been done before. And as crazy as we thought they were, the evidence is showing that they are 100% correct. And time is not linear. It is a cycle. And everything that they say about our world that happens in the future, there are precursors to the end of our world. And they list pretty much all of them in there, and they say every civilization has the exact same cycles, and then it's over.
Now, this might sound like a flippant question. How did they get so smart?
Well, that goes back again to what we were talking about, the individuals that go through this hole, they come back to our Earth, and they teach us from what they've learned. They teach us what they've learned. The one thing about Mayan civilization and Egyptian civilization, Sumerian and Babylonian, they have all in common is giants. And what you learn from their hieroglyphs is when an individual comes back from the sky and has the knowledge of the cosmos, the knowledge of all the black holes, the celestial things, the knowledge of God, the knowledge of what happens at the end of the world, the knowledge of when you die, that individual is depicted in all writings, not as just a man, but as a giant man. It's a huge man, because the individual that has that knowledge is always depicted as a giant. So when you go to Mayans, if you look in their hieroglyphics, you'll see the leader who's a giant, and he's teaching these two or three other individuals. In the later Mayan codices, you'll see one of those two individuals that he was teaching. They're no longer the size of a man again. They're giants. So the ones who get the knowledge, they are seen as giants because they possess this great knowledge, this great information, this godlike stature. So in every creation, they're seen as giants. So those are the ones who have the knowledge, or the giants, they're the ones who teach the rest of civilization.
You've got a very hard road to walk, haven't you, Damon? I mean, I love and relate very much to the story that you tell and the narrative that you you put out there. But an awful lot of people are not going to buy it. You're going to have a real uphill struggle with mainstream science, I would have thought.
I don't think so. I think with any person with a reasonably skeptical mind, any person that has the ability to see, count, weigh, and measure, it's not hard at all. It's absolutely easy. The problem is belief. We funnel our information through whether we believe it or not, and that's why we are destroying our world. But the evidence is overwhelming. It's clear. But again, if you're funneling through a prism of whether you believe it, that's what creates the problem.
How long did it take you to put this work together, Damon?
It's been a long time. It's been a very long time. For example, I started with Egypt, and I had to start learning hieroglyphics. And once I learned a basic understanding of hieroglyphics, and believe it or not, that's all it really takes. That's what's so amazing. And this tells you what belief, how destructive belief is. The pyramid, the Great Pyramid of Egypt, tells us probably one of the most beautiful and holy stories of all time. And it has nothing to do with aliens. It has nothing to do with anything like that. And the knowledge, believe it or not, is right there in the hieroglyphics, clear as day. But because we bring our beliefs to the table, we won't understand it. And the one thing I've learned when I studied hieroglyphics of Egypt, I could then look at the hieroglyphics of Sumeria. I could then look at the hieroglyphics of the Mayans. I could then look at the hieroglyphics of all these other races. And believe it or not, they're all telling the exact same story, every single one of them. So this history where they tell us the world was separated by water, the continents had no contact, and we didn't have space flight, we didn't have airplane flight and all this, none of that's true. Because the evidence in the Mayans, in a civilization that was 2,000 years old, is the exact same thing as everyone else in all these other different parts of the world, and they're telling the exact same story.
What sort of a difference has this made to you personally? It's one thing to do a project and to make a series of films, or to write a book or whatever, but it's another thing to be affected by it. So how has this work affected you?
It affected me in a very unexpected way. And that is, I care now. I care more. When I was looking, I was like everyone else. If I didn't believe it, I didn't accept it. If I didn't agree with it, I didn't believe it. And knowing that all the other planets that were around us used to be full of water, full of life, are now barren, dead, and we're doing the exact same thing to our only planet that we have to live, is very, very disturbing. And I think if I could say anything, I care more. And the one thing that should give all of us pause, the one thing that should make all of us stop in our tracks, is just look at our space agencies. NASA, which sends us to Mars, sends us to the moon, space exploration, it's always exciting. NASA only has one goal now, and I don't know if you've been noticing. The goal is not to go to the moon anymore. It's not going to Mars. That's not their goal. The number one goal of NASA is finding another Earth to live on. And that tells us something is terribly wrong.
So why are we bothering with Mars? Why is this great international race to Mars on?
Mars has so many clues that tell us that there was a civilization there, and it's been wiped clean. It's been wiped clean of all traces of life.
So do you think there are clues to where we might go there? And that's why there's this great interest in Mars.
Yes, it's Mars is very important because we can create another civilization there. And like I said, the whole purpose of NASA now is to find us another place to live. There's something that's happening to this Earth where that is the chief concern of everyone in NASA. We've got to find another place to live.
So do you believe the political classes, and Donald Trump is about to be president of the U.S., know this reality and are complicit in the working towards it?
I don't know that, from what I've seen of Donald Trump, he's not one for really information briefings, from what they say. So I think at some point he will have to learn that. But NASA is not into space exploration anymore. We're into finding another home. We're into finding another Earth. That's their number one concern. And the one thing that should give everyone pause, and this is just a truth, and this is something that you discover. In the ancient world, there's a reason the pyramid is created, and the pyramid doesn't always signify a good thing. Because the ancient world shows us that whenever a pyramid is created on a world, it's not a good thing. We know there's a pyramid out there on the moon of Ceres. We know there's a pyramid out there on the moon, our own moon. We know there's a pyramid out there on Mars. We know there's a pyramid out there on Venus. And now we have a pyramid on our Earth, and they all have one thing in common. Every place where a pyramid is built is completely destroyed, wiped clean, barren, dead. Every outpost, every planet, every moon that has a pyramid on it is completely barren and wiped completely clean. And we're the last in our solar system that has a pyramid on it. And that is what I worry about the most.
On a practical level to do with your work, now you've got this out, or you are getting this out there, what do you do next?
Well, the hope is that at some point we open our eyes and say, okay, we understand the evidence, let's change. The only thing we can do, only thing I hope for, is that we change. If we stop this idea that if I believe it, it's so, and if I don't believe it, it's not so. If we eliminate that and begin to use the faculties that we were born with and change, we can change our destiny. We can change our outcome. We can change the next world for the lives of the next human beings that came before us. And this is what this is what is the most disturbing thing about our world. And we have the most disturbingly ugly human beings on our Earth that we've ever had, and we just don't care. We don't care. No one cares. And the one thing, and the reason I say that, I'm not saying that to be disparaging, just it's just in when we compare ourselves with the others that came before us, when they found out their world was dying, they didn't do what we would do. If we found out today our world were dying, we would spend all of our time with our families, probably. We would pray in church. We'd pray in our synagogues. We'd pray in our mosques. And we'd constantly pray, and we'd constantly spend time with each other because we know it'd be our last.
I understand what you're saying, Damon, but a lot of that, doesn't it, is not about the people individually. It's about their leaders.
It is, but it takes the collective to change it. It takes all of us to change it.
So what should, just briefly in these last couple of minutes, what should we be doing?
I think the thing that we should be doing is accepting the data on our atmosphere, the data on our Earth, the data on our environment, the data that we're finding, that we're compiling about these civilizations that came before us. if we can accept the data and work on solutions for the data, it changes everything.
Okay, but we are still going to our 5,125-year end time, but we'll be going in a better state. Is that so?
Well, that's the part of the story that no one knows. The only thing that we do know is, according to the Mayans, after 2012, we come into this new age of enlightenment, this new age of understanding, this new age where we learn we are not the top of the food chain, where we learn all the hidden secrets of the cosmos and God and all these other things. And that's what we're doing now, believe it or not. Everything that we're learning now is a whole new epoch in civilization, because we're learning things about those who came before us that we didn't know before. So in a sense, it truly is an enlightenment. We are really waking up to the idea that there's something else out there besides us.
What a fascinating conversation to start 2017, Damon T. Berry. There will be a lot of people who disagree. There will be quite a few people who say, yeah, it sounds like that guy's on the money. If people want to see your work, find out more about you, where do they go?
Okay. It's Publish It Free. It's on YouTube. So if you go to YouTube, search in The Knowledge of the Forever Time, it pulls up the series. If it's easier, if you can remember, Damon T. Berry, writer, is what I'm listed as. Just search for Damon T. Berry, and I would ask you to start. They're all called invitations. It's not an episode. It's an invitation, because the knowledge is opening up a new age for mankind. So you are invited, cordially invited, to the age of enlightenment. So each episode is an invitation. We call it an invitation because everyone's not going to agree with it. Everyone's not going to like it. So you're invited. If you don't like the invitation, you don't have to take part. Mm. But it starts from number one, number two, number three, number four, number five, and the most recent is number six. And I do ask that you watch in chronological order, because each of them build on the previous. But other than that, it's been very wildly successful. We had it on three different channels. We had 4 million views in like 1 year. So it's doing quite well.
So, look, people have to make a living. If you're doing this for free, putting it out there, what's in it for you?
Hope. Hope that someone will listen. Someone will understand and get it. You know, in the old days, when someone made a big breakthrough, for example, Albert Einstein or some scientist came to understand, they didn't package it in a book. They didn't try to make a bestseller and make a buck off of it. They created it, they wrote it the best they could, and they published it.
Mm. Do you see yourself in the same league as Einstein?
No, I don't. I'm just saying I like what they did when they created something. They didn't try to make the big book and make a big money off of it. They published it and got it out to as many people as they could.
I understand.
So that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to get it out there to as many people as I can, and that's the ultimate, that's the most important part of it to me. It's not trying to be anything other than that, but that's what I liked about the old world that we had. When you discovered something, you wrote it up, you got it to all the newspapers, you didn't worry about if you made any money off of it, you just got it out there so people could see it, and that's what we're doing.
Interesting stuff, Damon. I'm glad we had this conversation, and I wish you a very happy and fruitful 2017. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Howard. Appreciate it.
Damon T. Berry, filmmaker, interesting guy, don't you think? But tell me what you think. Send me an email through the website. TheUnexplained.tv is the place to go. And there you can leave me a donation if you'd like to, or send me a message about the show, suggest a guest or whatever. Thank you very much for being part of my story during 2016 and for bearing with me through all of it. And until next we meet, when we'll be well and truly into 2017, please stay safe, stay calm, and above all, stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.